Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldea.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Oh, women, have you heard? The show is coming to Austin, Texas. Join me Saturday, November 16th for the first ever live recording of the Free Birth Society podcast. We'll have an amazing guest tell us her truly wild Texan free birth story, plus a tell-all Q&A with me. It will all be emceed by the epic Austin beloved local Devonna May. An actual evening of hanging out with free birthing women, basking in story medicine. Yes, please. Make it a date night or come with your besties. It's going to be so fun. Tickets are on sale now. Go grab yours and then come hug me in real life. Link for tickets are in the show notes. I'll see you soon.
I was about 21 when I decided that I wanted to be a midwife. I was really drawn to this idea of the camaraderie and the like sisterhood and caring for mothers, essentially. So I went into midwifery very naively, not knowing what it would be like at all. And I was quite shocked with what I found, really. It was so many things. It's so complex. It's so huge. The system is very hierarchical. So you have doctors at the very top, senior doctors, junior doctors, senior midwives, junior midwives. Then you have healthcare assistants and students sort of together, maybe, and then women right at the bottom.
And by women, you mean the patients?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Women giving birth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely at the bottom. And then you have this, I don't know, it's just a lot of bullying, particularly in the hospital that I was in. They had a particularly bad culture of bullying, but I think that is pretty universal. Yeah. I learned later. I actually switched hospitals because I found it so appalling. And
this is how how many years were you a student midwife?
3.5 years.
And so that included rounds in the hospital, working in the hospital.
Yeah. So you go straight in, like first year, straight in.
Okay.
Straight in. I remember I started in community, my first placement, maybe 6 weeks after I started in first year. And then you go into, I think I went into birth center first and then labor ward. And then you do like your rotation of all the different.
And this is you being on track to become an NHS midwife in the UK.
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure that's clear for everyone listening. So it sounds like pretty early you're like, whoa, this isn't exactly what I thought it was.
Yeah. I remember my first placement it really hit me when I was on the labor ward and I was with a mentor who was shouting at a woman giving birth and she was threatening her that if she didn't push, she would get the doctor and get them to bring the forceps.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, what do you do with that? Like, I was just completely like, I think I really disassociated probably around then onwards, and I was I could feel myself becoming a shell of my former self, and I just looked at the midwives around me and I didn't want to be like them. And yeah, and you know, over the 3 years, I continued through all my placements and had a particular interest in home birth. That was something I felt really passionate about. And I felt passionate about being calm and just like keeping it very simple. And I felt most at home in the kind of birth center or home birth setting, but I unfortunately wasn't able to do a home birth, like witness a home birth or do a placement, because I had to resit a labor ward placement. So yeah, they kind of obstructed me from doing home birth experience. Yeah, so 3 years down the line, I want to complete my midwifery, but I kind of know at this point that it's not something that I want to continue with.
Did you have the language for why not?
I didn't really have the language. No one around me was really questioning things.
Right.
I felt like a complete outsider, actually. Because I was questioning things, and then I was sort of being, I don't know, it felt like I was, that wasn't welcome, well, very much wasn't welcome.
Yeah.
And I made my own life very hard because I asked questions, and I have always, that's just who I am. I always ask questions and just why we're doing things. Why are we doing things this way? And why are we not doing them this way? And could we try this? And that just wasn't a culture of curiosity. That was very much shut down. So I felt it. I didn't really have, yeah, I don't know if I had the words, but my body felt it most. And that was the thing that really alerted me to the fact that I couldn't continue, because my body was in crisis, basically. I was having like migraines all the time. I was just incredibly anxious all the time. I was a bit of a mess, to be honest. And when I wasn't on shift, I'd come home and just be recovering. And that wasn't a life that I wanted to lead.
So at that point, was it framed in your mind like, oh, I'm just not up for being a midwife? Like, it's just so taxing on me. It's just so like hard on me, versus like my nervous system is fucked up from abusing women for 3 years.
It was, I saw it then as it's just a complete shit show.
Okay.
And I saw it as it's a problem of so many, there's so many things. It's such a complex issue. One is that it's a set of guidelines and policies that are designed for the masses that doesn't fit for the individual. That for me was just a very clear issue that has such widespread consequences and meant that I couldn't look after women how I wanted to, and how what I knew they needed, just on a very instinctual level. And I didn't want to, I felt this conflict, like this permanent internal conflict when I was like having to, you know, write notes permanently, check the CTG, like fiddle with CTG straps, like deal with medications, all the bits that you have to do and all the multitasking, felt completely in conflict with being with the woman, just being with her. And that was what I wanted to do. And that's what I knew that women wanted. And I just saw them being corralled and coerced and having experiences that they didn't want and that left them kind of shell-shocked. And yeah, I just knew that there was better than that. And I didn't know what it looked like at that point. So I hadn't seen it. I hadn't experienced it or witnessed it for myself.
I think for so many of us who grow up with this like vision of midwifery or this kind of, you know, maybe it's some sort of remembering, maybe not, I don't know. But I think the women who are really called to midwifery young for like the real reasons, like the authentic, you know, reasons, when this is the only path in front of them, it's super weird and doesn't fit this sense of what you're called to do, like you're talking about, of actually being with women. You know, it's like putting a totally different frame or paradigm onto what is otherwise a really pure vocation. It's like a spiritual calling, you know, to serve in such a significant and pure way. And then the path laid out ahead of you and most people is to go through this very patriarchal, very hierarchical, like medical route, but call it midwifery. And it's confusing, you know. I think women, I guess what I'm saying is it's so heartbreaking how many well-intended women who are called to midwifery get captured by allopathy and then can call that midwifery, and they don't actually get to do their soul's calling, or not get to. I mean, you could choose to, but when they get captured, they do something very different.
Yeah, and it is a capturing, I think, and it is a choice, of course. And I chose to leave, but I also heard so many midwives say, this is wrong, and I can't leave because I've got a mortgage to pay. You know, those trappings that are all interconnected with everything. And you know, the whole mindset of the type of people who get captured are very much those who want to help and feel like it's their duty to stay. And to kind of sacrifice themselves and be a martyr. But I knew that I couldn't do that. I knew that if I went on, I would just sort of die a sort of spiritual death. That's how it felt at the time. And I knew that there was better. I didn't know what that was. I was pretty wrecked, but I just knew I had to leave. So I did. And I went and worked in a completely different sector. I worked in the homeless support sector for 3 years, which was a complete, like, that was felt very untaxing in comparison. And I actually really enjoyed it. And I kind of closed that, the lid on midwifery, and I had a real grief around it. And I would often sort of feel like, oh, do I go back there? I want to go back there because it's my calling, and I can't. And I remember one midwife I spoke to, who was then a private midwife who had left the NHS, said that it felt to her when she left like leaving an abusive relationship. And I can definitely understand what she was saying, like the kind of claws that it had in me were still there, still trying to sort of pull me back. But I knew that it wasn't healthy for me or for anybody else. But I knew also that that part of myself was still there. But I it was another maybe 5 years before I sort of opened that box again. And then I went from the angle of doula. I did a doula training, and I attended one woman as a doula. And that felt much more aligned, like I was actually able to be with her. And, you know, just
in what kind of setting was it?
She was in the hospital. She didn't want a home birth. It was her third child, but it was a VBAC because her second was a cesarean. And luckily, it went very smoothly and very quickly. But it was a case of luck that that it went quickly for her, and that there basically wasn't time for intervention, in my opinion. But that didn't feel right either. Like, it felt much better. It felt much, much better. And, you know, I wasn't having to like write notes and like fiddle with machines. I was just able to sit with her and rub her back when she wanted me to, and, you know, put a cold flannel on her head and give her water, that kind of thing. And that felt good. But it didn't feel like I my whole body again just tensed up when I went into the hospital. And I
Okay, sisters, listen up. This is really big and really important. If you are a sovereign birth worker of any kind, if you are working with women holistically, totally independent of the medical system, the Worldwide Sovereign Birth Professional Directory is finally here. I am thrilled to announce that the Match a Birth directory is live. This is a long time coming and something we have been working really hard on behind the scenes that is going to majorly support the longevity of the birth liberation movement. We are contacted here at Free Birth Society on average 100 times a week by women around the world asking for our help in connecting them to sovereign birth professionals. So that really guided us to create something that fills a major need. No need to be underground anymore, no need to be at a loss of how to find your clients, or in reverse, where to even start looking for a radical birth keeper. We did the hard work to create the network so that you beauties can all find each other with ease. So here's the deal. Through the end of the year, we are intaking professionals who offer sovereign pregnancy and birth support. So that's coaching, education, birth witnessing, any and all of it. Women who offer postpartum support of any kind, women who offer holistic fertility and cycle coaching, and women who offer birth trauma integration sessions. Now, this can be live, in person, or virtual. If you are a professional that offers anything within these categories, you need to head over to matchabirthdirectory.com and get yourself listed. If you're a woman or a mother seeking these services, you can drop your name on our waitlist and be the first to hear when we go public. So all of you, but especially those of you in the professional world of birth, head over to matchabirthdirectory.com and join the network.
When I went into the hospital and I wanted to run away, was the feeling that I got when I went in to support her. I'm also at this time also farming. Growing and setting up a farm with some friends, and so not doing much in the birth work world. And then I become pregnant in 2022, beginning of. And I was actually at a Vipassana 10-day silent retreat. At the time when I sort of realized that I might be pregnant, which was such an amazing time. it was really wonderful. Like the first day of the retreat, I was sat down, and that should have been the day that I came on my period, and I was really regular and I didn't come. So that was a real signifier. But I was in Vipassana, so I was very much with the sensations in my body and not in my head. So I just made like a little note of it and then thought to myself, well, we'll see what happens. And then sure enough, the days went by and each day my period didn't come. And I thought, okay, well, we'll see what happens the next day. And it didn't come. And then it was not until my partner, Sammy, picked me up at the end of the retreat. And after about half an hour of chatting, I sort of mentioned that my period hasn't come. And he was like, oh, we're having a baby. And I was like, I feel like we're having a maybe at this point.
A maybe baby.
A maybe. And then, you know, a few more weeks pass and it turned into we're having a probably. And then, yeah. But yeah, I actually really credit Vipassana for the teachings that it gave me that I used in labor. Mm-hmm. And actually postpartum and just every day up until now. So pregnancy, I'm still pretty indoctrinated, you could say. Mm-hmm. And also aware of the way that things work in the maternity system. So I remember thinking I want to experience what it's like on the other side, so as a pregnant woman. So I went along to my appointments. I requested that...
Like you sign up with NHS?
Yes.
And you're... Okay, got it.
Yeah. So
that's
so
interesting.
Yeah.
After being like, I can't handle working here. But did you have any reference point for anything else yet?
No. So Free Birth was just a word, really. It's a word that I had encountered, and I knew that women did it, and it wasn't in my life. It wasn't part of my consciousness. It wasn't something I did or thought about doing at all. I was all about home birth. Like, I knew I wanted a home birth. Definitely, definitely. So yeah. So I went along to my appointments. I requested that I see the same midwife because to me, continuity was a slightly less bad way of doing it, in that I knew that the midwife would learn to, you know, we'd grow a relationship of some kind, and she'd learn to trust me and I her to some degree. And then she would be less suspicious of, you know, my body, of everything sort of going on in that kind of realm. And there'd be less chance that she would try and coerce or kind of.
What about what you knew about the on-call schedule with like getting her at your birth though?
Well, so at this point in time, home birth services were suspended. So this was 2022. So, you know, the case was that they were still recovering from a lot of midwives leaving, and sort of COVID disruption. So the home birth service wasn't something that was running. So I was pretty, yeah, like, you know, pretty in victim, I would say, pretty like, oh, this is not fair. Like, you know, I worked in midwifery and this is something I'm very passionate about, and now it's my turn and I can't have my home birth, kind of thing. And yeah, I explored every single option that I felt was available. I explored we were living on a narrow boat at the time. I explored moving that to a different city so that we could access like birth center there. We visited the birth centers, lots of different birth centers, but none of it felt right. I, you know, explored even going to hospital. I went on a tour to the hospital, and I felt my whole body just tense up, and I was like, no, exactly what I thought would happen. But I at some point realized like, oh, I don't have to try and mold to this situation. Like, I can just stay at home and see what happens. So yeah, but it took a while. Like, I really considered birth center and hospital, because the hospital in my city doesn't actually have a birth center either. It's just labor ward, and then the birth centers were in other towns around. Yeah, so I actually had a doula as well, who suggested free birth. She planted that seed quite early on, and just as an option. And so that had been planted. And it wasn't until I was maybe 35-ish weeks, and that's when I really started thinking about free birth. And it went from thinking I'll just stay at home and see how things go to I'm gonna free birth at that time. And that shift was like, it felt monumental. I remember a point where I realized that if I didn't invite anyone into my space, into my home, who I didn't know and didn't trust, then I didn't have to do any of this advocating, which is a word that's often used in the doula world and the midwifery world, advocating, which to me is just fighting, like fighting.
Well, really what it is asking permission. You know what I mean? Which results in that sense of fighting, but the whole concept of advocating for yourself is being like, please, can I please not do this? Could you please not do this? Like, it's so insane that adult women are willing to go into these really gnarly predatory, you know, institutions and then be like, but please, God.
I know, and the kind of maneuvers, it feels like a chess game almost of like, you never know what the attitude of the midwife is that you're going to have. You don't know who she's going to be. You don't know what mood she's going to be in. You don't know, there's so many things to consider that once I realized I didn't have to do that, that's when the word free birth really came alive. I was like, oh, it's
And I
free,
just
like
have
it.
to say, I think if we're going to say it's like a chess game, the mother only has half her pieces on the board. Like
Yeah.
it's an unfair matching, right? Like
Completely,
she's only got a
completely.
couple of players, and then there's a full
Yeah.
arsenal on the other side going against, And
And she hasn't been told all the rules either.
totally. Yeah, only the opponent knows the rules. Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is a very liberating and very important, thing for everyone to realize that for you to have a home birth, you don't need anyone else there. And we've gotten so brainwashed to think that home birth means a medical provider is with you at your home, which is almost funny, like a home birth means you have a baby at home. You need a home in order to have a home birth. That's what you need. You don't need anyone. I mean, I hear, I coach women from all around the world, and I hear these wild, creative, stressful, dramatic stories of how women, on small islands or in places where there aren't medical midwives, like import them in and have, all this expense and fly to places where there's da 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 just so they can have their home birth. And it's like, oh my God, that's not what you're doing. That's not what you're doing. You're trying to have a medical midwife assisted birth. You can just have a home birth. It's really speaks to how successful the language has been manipulated.
Yeah, it's like a colonization of birth, isn't it? Of like it doesn't belong to you anymore.
Yeah, so that's a big deal for you to be like, whoa, I actually am just gonna stay home.
And I could really start visualizing myself giving birth at home once we moved off of our boat and we had the opportunity to rent a house, this beautiful little house in a woodland. And it went from being, because a narrow boat, which I absolutely love, but it's basically a corridor next to a public footpath. I just
No.
couldn't quite imagine myself, completely letting go and like, making the noises I wanted to make and just feeling really free. So as soon as we moved into this house, I just felt like this, ah, I can see it now. I can see it. And yeah, I stopped working at the farm about 36 weeks, about the same week that we moved house, and just started really slowing down and yeah, going inwards and going on lots of wild swims and singing with the women from my women's circle and yeah, just and learning all my fears, which was the work that I was having to do at that time. And I had a lot of them really come up, that were there from my midwifery days. So yeah, it was quite an unraveling and unlearning.
So did you know anyone who free birthed? Like, who did you talk to? How did you resource yourself for such a crazy thing?
Well, I was very selective about who I told. And yeah, I just like drank up as many stories as I could. The Free Birth Society, just listened to all of those episodes. I spoke to and sought out women like online who had had free births. I spoke to friends, and if they knew someone who had a home birth, I would contact them and I'd have telephone conversations where women, that I'd never met before would tell me their birth stories, which was so lovely. I really cherish that. And a friend, well, it was a a friend of mine who I've never actually met from the online world, who had a free birth, who also lived on a boat, told me about the complete guide to free birth. And so the complete guide to free birth, which for anyone who doesn't know, Emily and Yolanda did, was like instrumental in my unlearning and my, yeah, I felt completely guided and held by that actually, as well as the stories that I was hearing and collecting. Yeah, so I was 42 weeks and 3 days when I went into labor. And in the weeks following up to that, so I stopped attending midwifery appointments at about 37 weeks because I felt like it wasn't the energy that I wanted to invite into my space. And I was just really noticing that, you know, when I came out of those sessions, I was just feeling kind of separate from my body, very much in my head and more stressed and more fear, even though I knew what I was looking out for, and I knew the kind of moves, if you like, that midwives would utilize to try
But
and.
it's still a field, you know? It's still, and
Yeah.
this is where I think women really need to understand. Like, it doesn't matter how strong you are, it doesn't matter how much you know, it doesn't even matter if you were a medical midwife student. It's a field of consciousness, it's a field of energy that when you are in it, man, it's hard, it's dark, it's heavy. It is all the stuff you're describing. And I think, you know, I see so many women be like, well, I know enough that I can like hold my own. And I think that analogy we made up is maybe a good one, is like, okay, but you have half your pieces and you don't know the rules. You think you know the rules and you're wrong. You know, I mean, maybe you can know some of the rules, but no one gives a shit and you have no
Yeah,
power,
no one
right?
gives a shit. No one gives a shit. I mean, that's essentially, yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that, unfortunately, because, you know, the focus is essentially on maintaining registration and ensuring that you're not litigated against as a midwife. So that felt like the main concern. And I'm sure there's midwives who do a much like a much better job than what I'm kind of making it out like, but
Yeah, but they have the same, they're up against all the same stuff that you were and that you've described, you know? I think, I mean, I'm gonna say that I think the only way that you can do this job long term is to, what's the right word? Like, is to let go of that really pure part of you that wants to be in full presence and really serve from this. Like, I don't think you can do that and stay in this job and survive emotionally. You know, it's almost this difference of, is it a job or is it a calling? And I think that midwives, NHS midwives, you know, women that work in the hospitals, that shit's a job. That's not your calling. It's not spiritual midwifery. That is checking the boxes, high volume, you know, keeping your head down, doing what you can. I'm not saying that there aren't good people in those systems. Of course there are. There's good people everywhere. It's about, you know, so much more than that. People like get so upset when I say stuff like that. But come on. You can't actually, like you said, be one-on-one, be with the individual when you are under such a, I mean, you know, the shifts alone are abusive, you know, like much less the actual job description and then the pecking order and all the ways you're trying to keep it together and just literally do your job so that you can get your check and go home and be with your own kids. You're not able to be resourced enough or hydrated enough or slept enough to show up in the way that we're talking about. I don't think it can happen in the system.
No, and I completely agree. There's just like way too many demands on an individual. And this idea that you are responsible over women is extremely heavy. And like an impossible sort of idea as well.
And
It's an
they're
impossible
babies.
idea. Yeah,
These like
completely
unborn
impossible.
creatures, you're also a...
Yeah, it's an impossible job.
and then it's also pitting, in many ways, it's pitting the medical midwife against the patient if there's any sort of, friction or requests that are beyond what's appropriate for for the midwife's own like culture in the ward and with who's on, like the whole thing is really tricky politics to navigate. Even the most well-meaning midwives or nurses who really want to be with this patient and really want to see her and honor her and hashtag advocate for her, it's still not able to be done in an ethical way because of all the other stuff that they're having to juggle and navigate and, all the stuff. But there's this like pitting against, a woman on woman, bullshit that kind of by design has to happen. Ultimately, when the midwife is in a position where she has to look out for herself in this toxic dynamic, you know what I'm saying?
It's like a survival. It is like the midwives have to find a way to survive in
Well, she's going to
amongst.
get in trouble. Like, if she's going to get in trouble easily if she steps outside of what her superiors want, what's expected of her. I mean, there's only so much wiggle room for a nurse or a medical midwife in the hospital before it gets weird in the pecking order. I mean, would you agree?
Totally. Yeah, with
Yeah.
everything you said. Yeah, completely.
Okay, so you are at the four, you're 42 weeks and a couple days, and you know you're going to free birth. You've resourced yourself. You did your last NHS thing. It didn't feel good, so you stopped doing that. What else is there to say pre-birth, if anything?
Free birth. I think I felt really strongly, particularly towards the end of the pregnancy, that those I wanted to be really intentional about who I was spending time with and what I was consuming, not only, food and drink, but also in terms of information, in terms of the energy field that I was in. And I got really irritated and with the impatience that people were having, because I was 42 weeks now, and babies can't go to 40 what 42 weeks, can they? Like, do they let you do that? All those kind of comments. That yeah I was surprised actually at how irritated I felt, but it was a lot coming up. And so and I had the hospital calling me every day at some point around 40 weeks.
Whoa. So,
And
because you just kind of stopped coming, you didn't like break up with them.
no, I didn't break up. I just explained that I didn't feel didn't feel it was necessary and all was good, and kind of, put a little balm on it as well, and said, you'll be the first people I contact if I think there's a problem, and which was important, to do it that way, because always in the back of my mind was, I don't want them to do a social services referral. So being very mindful of the way that I interacted with them, because I was very aware of that from my training, that it's always at the discretion of the midwife. And if egos feel bruised, then there's more of a chance of referral. So yeah, that's just how it is, unfortunately. It's a very real part of it, of
And even just even more simply, it's very easy for someone who's been seeing you prenatally to know that you haven't given birth because you haven't contacted them to calculate that you're 42 weeks and be genuinely concerned at how stupid you are that you know what I mean? Like, what an unfit, stupid, neglectful woman who is genuinely putting her baby at risk. Like her baby's going to die if she doesn't get induced. You know, like there's a lot of righteousness in the brainwashing that it is their duty to step in with these stupid women who don't know what they know.
And it is, I think, so much to do as well with the relationship. So that it wasn't the midwife I had seen all along that was calling me necessarily. It might have been her, but it was, it gets passed along. If she's not on shift that day, it'll get passed to the midwives in the unit who would call you, and they've never met me. And then they're very concerned because they've never met me. And how do they don't know who I am and how I
The
think.
big
And
system.
yeah, the big system. So it's a scale thing as well as a relationship thing. And yeah. All thrown into the mix. So I told them at some point, don't contact me. I'll co like you can contact me in a week, just don't contact me anymore. So that was fine.
Wow. Well, it's like, it's kind of pitched as this voluntary free service, but actually you're opting into like a big daddy super, surveillance program. You know, I mean, I have interviewed a lot of women who didn't call the NHS midwives and had social services fuck up their postpartum. You know, of course, it's so intense.
I mean the postpartum stuff, I'll maybe touch on that later, but
So you're able to kind of push them off. Don't call me, I'll call you.
yes.
And so things are fairly settled, it sounds
Things are
like,
fairly
right?
settled, fairly settled. Fairly settled. I didn't know many people or any people around me who had free birth, so I did feel kind of isolating. But I also had this really intuitive sense that I just wanted to be, I wanted to be around people who I felt really comfortable with, and like sisters who I loved, and and what I felt really cool to do was sing, and that felt like something that would bring on labor. And I, yeah, we gathered with my women's circle, and we had a sing. I ended up singing that song that a friend taught us that day in early labor, which was really
Oh,
lovely.
yeah.
And yeah, so the day that I went into labor, it was October. I think it's quite a sunny day. And Sammy was on the farm working, and I'd asked him to come home a bit earlier that day because I'd felt like I needed him around a bit more. And I'd like to go on a walk every day, but I was getting slower and slower each day, like slower than snail's pace at this point. And my hips were like, I didn't really think of anything of it at the time, but they were just so clunky, and I was so slow. Baby, I think, was just really low. But at the time, I didn't really, think anything of that really. Neither here nor there. It was just part of pregnancy. Those usual feelings of, am I going to be pregnant forever? Is that, Googling, has anyone ever been pregnant forever? No, they haven't. That morning, I'd had a nap, which was quite unusual, for a couple of hours, and I had a really like lovely, like warm, glowing, really gradual contraction in the morning. And I felt kind of spacey that day, and just sort of plodding around, tying up some last bits. And Sammy came home about midday. And I got the number of a woman who had free birthed her first baby, and she'd gone to like 43 weeks plus a few days. So I called her up, and she told me her story. And that was so lovely. I'm so grateful to her. Because I came off the phone and I went into labor. It's the medicine of story. And actually, I wanted to touch on as well that this birth really taught me about the power of dreams, because I had meditated on the birth that I wanted. And I had been, you know, like a self-proclaimed realist up until then, and thought, you know, I was quite hesitant to do a meditation on what I wanted, because to me that felt like setting myself up for disappointment. But then I did it anyway. And I ended up having that birth that I had dreamed of. Which, yeah, I feel I tie that in with a lot of the work that I do now with women and in pregnancy circles and with coaching and working with women. And, you know, that the power of dreaming, and knowing your desires and illuminating them before you is incredibly powerful. And I've, you know, seen that now. I've experienced that. And that thread also links back to when I was a midwife. I was doing my midwifery training, and I knew that something better existed, but I didn't quite know what it was. And then through this birth, I then was able to have evidence of what that was and know that, oh, okay. And it opened up this whole other world.
Well, I think there's a really important difference between planning and dreaming, you know? And I think, you know, women who aren't familiar with that will think they're the same thing at first, and you have to kind of untangle. It's one thing to sit down and plan, you know, like when women tell me, like, I'm going to have a water birth and my baby's going to be born on, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was like, okay, like, you think you have a plan. That's not the wisest thing, you know? But that's really different than wonder and dreaming and fantasy and, you know, what if it was like this? What if it was like that? And, oh, that sounds like it would be so nice if I had that. And like opening up that creative consciousness creates bigger and wider possibilities, right? It's like uncapping, you know what I mean? Versus planning. And so I think, I know a lot of women are hesitant to dream because they first think they don't want to get disappointed if it doesn't go that way. But that's a plan. That's a different... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it is a creative unveiling, isn't it? It's like, what is possible? What is possible? Where can I allow my mind to go? Where does it want to go? What does my heart want?
Right. Most women don't even ask themselves for their entire life, what do I really want? Women don't ask, what do I want out of a marriage? What do I want out of my career? What do I want my house to look like? What do I want my birth to be like? I mean, women are in such a reactionary, uncreative state, in such a survivalist state, until they're not. Obviously, women are also not in that, but until they're not, you know, it is kind of it takes some work to kind of deprogram out of the matrix, as they say, you know, to really get willing to ask yourself what you want and then get willing to have it, which is what's so cool about the catalyst of a sovereign birth, like the possibilities embedded in that. And pregnancy really asks that, or could ask us, what do I really want? You know, and then, like you said, you know, people actualize it. It's so cool.
It's amazing. Yeah, I don't think I'd ever experienced anything quite like that. I think I'm someone who's quite, especially in the years before that, very in touch with, you know, going for what I want and being in my heart space since leaving midwifery, actually. But that idea of actually meditating on what I wanted and that exact thing happening was new to me. And wild, really. So I went into labor after this conversation. We were going to go on a walk, like a bit further afield, but I felt like just going on a walk around our house was a good idea. And I didn't really know why. I was just, you know, going with the flow. And so we're walking through the woods and with my partner and my dog and singing this song that I'd sung with the women a few days previously, and the sun was just going down. It was about 6 p.m. at that point, maybe. And Sammy said, oh, this will be the last sunset, just the two of us. And I was like, yeah, that's sweet. And also, I don't know, who knows? Like, I'd prepared myself for it to be maybe 3 day long labor. Who knows? I was just very much with each sensation as it was coming, and just, and it was a lovely moment as well. And we went back home and the contractions started picking up, getting more intense. We thought, right, better have a bit of a rest, a bit of food. And I had a bath and some food, and Sammy had a bath too. So just, you know, preparing for the long haul, really, potentially. Set up the birth pool. By that point, our boiler had packed in because we'd already had a bath. So Sammy was then using the kettle to top up the pool. I tried that. I didn't feel good at that point. So I came out and just was laboring in front of the fire, like the log burner, which was so lovely to have that element there with me too. And yeah, they really started to pick up. And my doula, Nova, I didn't quite know if I was going to be calling her, and I didn't quite know, there was a possibility that she wasn't going to be around as well because she was going away. And I knew all of this before we'd agreed to work together, and I was up for the gamble, because really I wanted her there. And also I only really wanted her there. I didn't really know anyone that I wanted to invite into that space. And I labored for about 6 hours before we messaged her. And then Sammy messaged her when my contractions were really close together and really strong. And I was just very much with the contractions. I wasn't really in my head. I remember she asked, like, oh, you know, she asked Sammy how regular they were. And I was like, oh, I'm not counting at all. But then I sort of came into my head. I was like, okay, oh, they're about 4 and 10, right? Okay, 4 in 10 minutes, 4 to 5. And so it was going to take her a couple of hours to sort out childcare and get over. So that was a good time, it felt to me. And so that was the only real, that was a moment of like assessment. And then I dropped back into my body and I was very much with my breath and just meeting the sensations. And I was sort of like I was in Vipassana, just meeting the sensation and going straight to it and not trying to change it, just being there. And that worked pretty well until until it didn't. I carried on like that, and I remember I really wanted to lie down, so I would lie down, but then contracting lying down just felt like unreal, like I couldn't do that. So when the contraction came, I'd like flip over and go on my hands and knees, and that felt much better. And at that point Nova had arrived, and I felt real relief at that point. Felt good to have her there, and she was a very calm, gentle presence and didn't say anything really. She was there and, you know, giving me water and occasionally reminding me to pee. And at one point I felt quite stuck, like it was becoming a bit too much for me. And Nova, seeing this, suggested maybe the pool would be a good idea to try. And I was upstairs at that point, and it's a spiral staircase to get downstairs where the pool was, and it felt like quite an impossible feat. But I made it. I like ran down as much as you can run when you're in labor, like between contractions, and launched myself in the pool, and that felt good. And then I really started to feel like I was getting sort of thrown about by the contractions, started to feel like, oh, I can't meet it anymore. Like I'm feeling really out of control and like it's just beating me up. And that's the point when I started to look for a way out. And I said, I'd like you to call the midwives. And I knew that they wouldn't come out because the service was suspended. but I didn't know what else to do. Like, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do the labor or the birth anymore, and I wanted someone else to do it. So I pulled that card as the only one I really had. And Nova and Sammy were like super calm and didn't like they listened and they heard it, but they didn't do anything about it straight away. They let me contract a bit more, and then I was like, can you call the midwives? And we spoke about it, and it wasn't really a real reason. Like, I couldn't really articulate a real reason. It was that I wanted a way out. And we, yeah, anyway, Sammy went out of the house to make this phone call. I think he knew that it would be, you know, quite disruptive to the room, I guess, having it inside. And he came back in and said, I spoke to the midwives and told them you were pushing, because I had been pushing a bit by that point. And they said that it's an emergency and you need to call an ambulance. So obviously that I knew that that was not what I needed. And in that moment, I was just like, what? Okay, fuck the midwives with my words. And that was the moment when I was like, okay, I'm gonna get down to it and it's down to me.
Well, like the kind of funny thing is, it was always down to you. Like, what were they gonna do? It's not like she's gonna, what?
Do it
Like,
for me. Hop
take,
in my body and
what?
push. Yeah,
Trade souls with you.
that wasn't an option that they offered. Yeah, I mean, getting in an ambulance, calling anyone, getting out, like, this is ludicrous. That just wasn't, no, that wasn't gonna happen. And so I kind of like slotted back into this mindset of like, okay, no, this is me. I'm giving birth. I'm gonna do it. And the mantra I had in my head was the only way out is through. And so yeah, I started pushing and I had a feel and I could feel my baby's head right at the top of my vagina. And I, you know, pretty sure it was a head, it could have been something else, but I was fairly sure it was a head. and after about an hour of pushing, like it felt good to push. Like I was pretty like actively consciously pushing as hard as I could actually, which felt good. It felt like it just felt good. And an hour later I had another feel and the baby had come like halfway down my vagina. And at that moment I was just like, oh my goodness, like I'm doing it. And this feels good. And I could feel my baby moving. And I knew that she was, but I didn't know she was a girl actually. I knew that my baby was well and just felt amazing. And yeah, pushed for another hour. And Sammy was still there, like filling the water, the birth pool with pans of hot water, because at this point the kettle had broken. So he was like heating them up on the stove and then running through. At one point, like, got me a bit on the bum, which wasn't part of my birth dream, but it was nonetheless there. And it was fine, it wasn't bad. And yeah, baby started to crown. And I remember thinking, okay, well, that's why they call it the ring of fire, because it feels like a ring of fire. And at this point, very much with every single sensation, it was so lovely to like feel everything that was going on. Like I could feel her feet wiggling and it was just amazing. And even the ring of fire was amazing in its own way. And I did feel like my clitoris was going to ping off at one point. I don't know if that's TMI, but
You're
that
not
shocked
the
me.
first, and you won't be the last.
That did surprise me. But even so, you know, all these sensations were such a privilege. I just felt very privileged to be experiencing them and in their fullness. And yeah, baby I was quite intentional about, just going quite slowly at this point and not pushing really a lot, and just easing the baby out and letting the tissues kind of gradually stretch and make way for the baby. And her head was born, and Sammy like hopped in the pool, and she was facing me, so she had her back towards it, so she was back to back. And then so her head was out, and then I put one leg up, and I was really trying hard to like keep my bum under the water, because all I wanted to do was like rise up like this, but I knew if I rose up, then my bum would be out the water, and she might sort of flop out via the air into the water. So that didn't seem right to me. So I wanted to like keep my bum down, and I was asking Sammy to like help me keep my bum down.
Which, just for anyone listening, like that is fine, and that babies are born that way all the time.
You mean like where they come out into the air and then into the water? Yeah.
People freak out about it on like I've posted many videos of women free birthing that way, and people lose their minds.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It's fine. What you really don't want to do, or what seems to my mind this the thing you want to be careful of, is putting them back in after they've come up, which I've also seen and seen babies be fine. But like in the shifting of the legs and moving them around when they're born in the water. But going like I've seen quite a few babies just fly into the water or even like slip through the hands, like mom's trying to catch and they fall into the water or into the toilet, into the water. But anyway, whatever, that was on your mind that you didn't want to do that.
Yeah, totally. And I'd like to watch those videos too to kind of like heal that, because it's an idea that's come from my midwifery training again that was there. And
But also those babies are very unlikely like taking a breath before they're hitting the water. I mean, we're talking about a second,
I mean, they're pretty slippery, so they'd fly.
I also just, I've never seen it be a problem, like they're from water. If there's a split second of air into the water, I mean, I understand the potential concern, but I haven't actually seen it play out as a problem.
That's interesting. Yeah, so I sort of went into a lunge position after her head was born, and then she was born with the next contraction. I remember thinking, oh, should I like push now, or should I wait for the next contraction? I was sort of like trying to think like, oh, what is it I'm meant to do? And she was born, and I picked her up into my arms, and just sat there staring at her. It was like in complete awe. And I mean, there's nothing like that moment when you go from being, pregnant to now you've got a child for the rest of your life, and this is them, and this is the person you've been waiting to meet. And this is her. And yeah, we just discovered that she was a girl, which we were completely delighted by, and sort of secretly both wanted a girl, which we'd only admitted to each other like a day or two before birth, and had no idea either way whether the baby was going to be, boy or girl. So it was lovely, lovely surprise. And yeah, maybe no more than a minute later, I had really strong contractions, and my placenta came, caught it in a bowl, and I got out of the pool. My legs were super, super shaky. I think because I've been pushing quite hard, like, and I guess it had been 12 hours by that point of being in labor, and yeah, my legs were very shaky, but I was fine. Sammy was holding the placenta in a bowl, which was still attached to my daughter, who was in my arms. And I sort of stumbled a meter or two to the sofa and just sat there, and she fed on my breast straight away. And yeah. Nova bought us some food and some tea, and yeah, was sort of like checking us from afar and just making sure we had what we needed. And my dog was there too. He'd been there the whole time. Kind of annoyed that we were keeping him up, I think. But yeah, it was really beautiful. And by that point, it was maybe we had the birth was maybe about 5, 6 a.m. I'm not sure about then. So after a couple of hours, like snuggling on the sofa and feeding, and the cord had gone white, and we said a few words of thanks to the placenta and prepared my daughter for the cutting of the cord, and said a few words of thanks and cut the cord. And then, yeah, Nova had done, she'd like changed the bed for us and done a bit of washing up. And then she left, and we went upstairs to our bedroom, and I stayed there for like 6 days, and before I came downstairs. And yeah, it was just beautiful, like a very beautiful postpartum. Like, I feel like I was staring at this beautiful baby for like at least 6 months. I still am, actually. But yeah, it was beautiful, like just having the woodland next to us as well, and going for walks with the trees. And every single day, it felt so held and peaceful. And I really think that the birth was, was the foundation of that. Yeah, and Sammy was wonderful too, in his support of, making sure I had everything that I needed. And we were able to be very present and just really enjoy. Yeah.
So then, kind of in closing, take me through, kind of up till now. Like, you take RBK at some point. What's your work and birth look like now? Like, how did going through that school support you up till what you're about now?
Yeah, wow. So after I had my daughter, I had quite a few women contact me asking if I could support them with their births, because the home birth service was still suspended. And there were a lot of women out there who, like me, wanted the home birth and were looking at other options. And my baby was super young still, like 4 months old and younger at some points of when the when these women came to me. And I didn't quite feel like it was a good time to leave her or anything, but I really felt that calling, and I wanted a kind of a bit more guidance and support behind me. So I'd done the Complete Guide to Free Birth and absolutely loved it, and loved the way that you guys taught, and just the whole thing felt so like just everything that I needed to prepare for the birth. So I felt like I had like that was a good sort of route into working with you guys more. Yeah, and I did the school in, when did I do that? Yeah, it was 2020. No, it was 2022, wasn't it? Oh no, sorry, it's 2023. 2023, spring. And yeah, I mean, it's changed my life completely. Like, the birth, and then doing RBK, and then women coming to me and, and supporting them. And I've started a pregnancy circle I was already running women's circles for a few years. And then I started a pregnancy circle earlier this year, which has been just like beautiful to witness the kind of connections and the ripples that come out of that. And women sharing their stories. And even we've had women who aren't pregnant yet come to those circles too and just be kind of exposed to those stories before they're pregnant, which I think is so important to have that exposure before, if possible. And yeah, just a building community in this area. And yeah, it's just been such a simple thing that has come out of being part of the RBK school and feeling like that community, and then wanting to create sort of a version of that in my hometown and spread the word and let people know that it's an option. And yeah, just kind of illuminate birth for what it is. And it's just a very beautiful thing that like women get together and we sing and we eat food and we share stories and we just yeah, we're in our hearts with one another. And yeah, we've had like 4 babies were born in May, and two of those were free birth from our circle. One of them was a breech as well. And yeah, there's so many more coming as well. And we all, there's a few of us now who are either pregnant and planning free birth or have had free birth, who all kind of thought we were on our own and that there was no one else doing it. And now, you know, we've got this collective community that just keeps growing. It's very exciting. And I have had the pleasure of supporting one woman with her birth. Yeah, and it was just an absolute, well, it was just a dream. Again, I was able to support her exactly how I imagined I could and I wanted to. And it all just happened like that. And it was so simple and beautiful. And, you know, like, oh, just the whole process from the very beginning. Like, she contacted me before she was even pregnant. Because she'd had a baby already in the hospital and wanted to know that when she got pregnant again, that there were other options because she'd had such a horrific time. And so that whole process of just gently getting to know one another and building our connection, and yeah, it's just divine. And I, yeah, can't think of anything else better to do in this world.
Can I put you on the spot and ask you to sing your birth song? And that
Oh.
can be how we close your episode.
Okay, I've got a bit of a sore throat, but I think I've got enough for a song. There's different parts, but I'll just stick to the one part. I don't think I'll manage three on my own. It goes like this. Home, I'm going home. I need the lamb to feed my soul. Take me home, take me home. Over the green, green hills and far away.
That's beautiful.
Thanks, Emily.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to hear your story.
Thank you for hearing my story. It's, yeah, feels good to get it out there.
Thank you, Libby.
Thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel. We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive private vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars.